this is Insights from Beyond, and I'm David Abramson, and we're celebrating Judaism in the New Age.
And beyond, feel that despite some of its ill effects on society, a lot of values and ideals from that era really are worthwhile. And even more, that some 60s ideals and many New Age values often share a lot of common ground with the Torah lifestyle. Some of the topics we plan to cover on this hour include some of the pros and cons of health foods and alternative healing techniques and practices, Jewish meditation and the study of Kabbalah, vegetarianism, the animal rights movement, the environment, political activism, belief in astrology, and a whole host of other topics from the perspective of traditional Jewish thinking. Whether you want to be a part of it is totally up to you, but don't go away. We're expecting a very special guest tonight who has both spoken and written on Judaism and New Age issues. He is Rabbi J. Yaakov Schwartz of Congregation Oev Shalom on Manhattan's Upper West Side. And Rabbi Schwartz is on the line already, and he also teaches at Yeshiva University, and he is an author of a very interesting article published in the Orthodox Union's Jewish Action magazine called Is the New Age Kosher? So stay tuned, and we'll be right back after these important messages.
Old car.
Hello again. This is Dave Abramson on the premier show of Insights from Beyond, the show about Judaism in the New Age. We'll usually be featuring both a discussion and music on this forum, a little bit of everything, so sit back and get comfortable. We're on till 9 here at WLIR 1300 AM. Our special premier guest on this first show of ours is Rabbi J. Yaakov Schwartz of Congregation Ohev Shalom on Manhattan's Upper West Side. Rabbi Schwartz, for those of you who missed his introduction a few minutes ago, teaches at the James Stryer School at Yeshiva University, and among other pursuits, was the author of an essay published in the OU's Jewish Action magazine entitled, Is the New Age Kosher? Hello, Rabbi Schwartz.
Good evening, David.
Hi, good evening. Welcome to our first show.
Pleasure to be here.
Thank you. Thank you very much. You know, we're very fortunate to have you as a guest on the show. There has been so much written about the New Age movement in the popular press, but not nearly enough from an Orthodox point of view.
Well, I think you're correct, David, in that the encounter with New Age for me really began when I became a rabbi in the Upper West Side. And coming from a more sheltered yeshiva experience, primarily Torah Vadas Lake, which I'm sure people in your listening area would appreciate or know people who have attended those yeshivas in seminaries.
Sure.
I never had confronted a lot of the practices, studies, books, traditions of people involved in the New Age until I reached Manhattan. And then I was beginning to receive some difficult questions as to why am I not getting out of my Yiddishkeit, what I'm experiencing at my meditation group from my psychologist, from the psychology books that I'm reading, and from the other New Age texts.
Mm-hmm. That's very. I guess it's somewhat common today, unfortunately, that happens. That we don't have answers, and that not that you didn't have answers, but.
So it was more of a challenge. It was put to me by people who I'd encountered through my congregation, saying, what is your response, Rabbi, to the fact that I'm getting so much out of, let's say, an example I receive, gestalt therapy, meditation groups, body work. People would go to seminars and do breathing exercises and somehow relive past experiences. And they felt that these were spiritual groups and they were getting spiritual nourishment out of it. But when they would come into shul on Shabbos, they would come away nonplussed. They would come away unmoved. And in fact, for many people, turned off.
Mm-hmm. And that's, it seems to be actually quite common today. It's happening a lot. And it is a popular movement that really does demand answers from the Jewish world. And it seems that so many areas of our lives have been affected by this movement, yet so very little has been reflected on it from a rabbinical perspective. So how many of us have also gotten involved in eating whole wheat challah, say, or in boning up about health foods over recent times? Certainly the 60s and New Age can be attributed with a lot of the revival of these types of interests. At least most people today are apt to conclude things this way.
I would say so, and I think maybe it's just a way of framing it to start. I think you have to divide New Age practices and other practices along the following lines. There are those that are health-oriented and psychological-oriented, and then there are those that have theological parts to them. And I think that the area that is least compatible with Yiddishkeit are the area that gets into theological issues. For example, a lot of the books that were written that are part of the New Age movement carry a belief in something called channeling, which is, I'm sure, your phrase you're familiar with, David.
Yes, to some degree, yes.
And the idea that there are individuals who are able to receive what we would call, from a Torah perspective, some level of divine inspiration, call it a Ruach HaKodesh of sorts, and somehow be hooked up with spirits of various descriptions, and receiving information and teaching. So essentially they were establishing themselves as some sort of prophet. And people would be paying thousands of dollars, and you can think of some of the more popular ones, I don't need to mention them, and going to these people for guidance and so on. The use of crystals,
mm-hmm.
which is so by there are stores even in our neighborhood and throughout New York selling these crystals, and then artifacts from other religions. The question is, are these religions approaching the concepts of halachic avodah zarah? And yet they're being used, the approach was very eclectic, anything of a religious nature, no matter what the religion is, no matter what the religion believes, was considered something positive. And that might be difficult. On the other hand, the positive aspects of concern about health, concern about ecology, even a move towards vegetarianism, is something which there are certainly sufficient makoro to discuss its validity in Judaism. There's a very nice article by J. David Bleich in his Contemporary Halacha series about vegetarianism in Judaism and its merits and so on. And in terms of psychological healing, counseling, 12-step groups, all of that would fall into purview. So I think we have to make a distinction between theological New Age and all of their oracles and teachers and channelers and belief in spirits and communication with spirits and even artifacts, and on the one hand, which is more problematic, and the things which are less problematic in terms of psychological growth and development and health.
It's very true. The thing is, though, that I don't know. I think that was exactly the point that I was going to make next, though, but it doesn't really matter, sure, and it's a good point. I think that, I think as Jews, in order to do this, we have to find a valid rationale from the Torah which supports halachically, you know, whatever new truths we see in these new ideas as our culture spins them out to us. In other words, we have to be able to say that if something is valid or true, then in some way it has already been revealed in the Torah long ago.
Mm-hmm.
And that that if people are to say that there's some positive aspect of some New Age agenda, which where it does fit, not of course where it wouldn't, that how are we to get the positive energy from such things? I mean,
I think a good example, I could tell you a personal story. I know a fellow who was a self-described New Ager who had come to some event at our shul a couple of years back and was very, you know, interested and excited about Judaism. We developed a relationship, and he says, "Rabbi, I want to come over and show you something." And he brought over his kit for aromatherapy, which is when he took out an elaborate set which had all sorts of perfumes which matched different colors. And then he said, "Rabbi, just look at the colors and smell the scents, and it's something that's very, you know, a positive experience." So, of course, you know, we did it. We tried it together. Then I turned to him And I said, you know, we, in Torah we also have aromatherapy in halacha. So you might guess where that is, but it's something we do every Saturday night, every Matzah Shabbos. And that's Havdalah. You know, making Havdalah and using Besamim, spices, as a way of reviving our spirits at the loss of our Neshama Yisera, is in a sense a concept of aromatherapy. So I found in dealing with people familiar with the New Age that they would associate to Yiddishkeit things from the outside world and then take a second look at Yiddishkeit and say, well, a lot of these spiritualist practices are right here. It's just no one ever explained them to me in that context. I could think of some other examples too. David, you had mentioned in your introduction about astrology. Was that something that you had on your mind in terms of how that works with Judaism?
Well, not exactly, but I guess eventually it was a subject that we were going to speak about on the air. I didn't mean to come off too pro, I mean, any of these issues. I maybe you caught me at a little bit of a loss for words here, but I was going to suggest that some of the philosophies of the New Age are, such as crystals and some of the other ones that were mentioned, you just mentioned aromatherapy and some of the others, that they do, you know, they of course do have some negatives to them, and they actually have a lot of negatives to them also. But even from a more general perspective, it's hard to word this, but I think that they have
redeeming features.
And they remind us of deeper aspects of Torah life as well. I mean, with in the Avodah of the Beis Hamikdash. Things that are really very deep.
Well, have you encountered some specific examples, for example, the New Age movement that you found have had merit from a Torah perspective, but only having seen them perhaps afterwards, considering them from the Torah perspective only after you've seen them in a different context, for example? What might be a theme that you have thought would be particularly positive and redeeming within the New Age circle of beliefs and teachings that might be something we might want to bring in to the more traditional circle, to the more observant circle, and take a look at what contribution it might make for us, how it could enrich our understanding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, light therapy is supposed to be very, relaxing and to take a person to a higher state that's synonymous with a state that we can get to through tefillah, through prayer, and through learning. And
how does it work specifically when you speak about light therapy?
Well, actually, from my understanding, there are the seven different colors of the rainbow, and they correspond to different aspects of divine light, of spiritual light.
Mm-hmm.
And they empower a person in different ways. Different colors have a different type of rhythm, a different type of soul to them.
Mm-hmm.
And they remind us of different things in nature.
Mm-hmm.
And they can really help inspire us in different ways.
There's no question in the Kabbalistic tradition that colors certainly are playing a role. I was thinking when you mentioned about light therapy and the importance of light, the concept of chakras, which I'm sure you're familiar with, which is very big in Eastern sort of work, in that there are certain energy centers within each area of the body, and that they reflect different colors, kind of the colors of the spectrum, Roy G. Biv, you know, red, orange, and so on, with the blue, indigo, violet being the ones on the head, and it working backwards on the spectrum as you go to the lower part of the body. And I had found that that exists in Kabbalistic thought. In fact, I remember Shlomo Kalbach once explaining that Tiferes, which was the third of the Midos after Chesed and Gevura, right, was green, which would mean it was the combination of blue and yellow, which would be the colors representing the divine attributes of Chesed on the one hand, being blue, Gevura being yellow, and then if you combine the two, which is Tiferes, which represents Avram and Yitzhak on the one hand, having been representative of Chesed, Avram being Chesed, loving kindness, and Yitzhak being the ultimate of Gevura in strength and self-control, and Yaakov being the balance, and he's represented by Tiferes, so it finds its reflection through the theme of colors. And I'm sure that in the Kabbalistic tradition, it is a matter of contemplating and meditating and getting some value and benefit over reflecting on those colors. And it does have some a meditative, positive effect. There's no question. Most of us are not so familiar, especially those who are not coming from any sort of Hasidic background, with the concept of Sviros, of divine emanations, and Midos, and Chesed, and Gevura. But all of us, in every level of observant Judaism, have aspects of this Kabbalistic thought. For example, in the Sukkah, we invite all of those guests into our Sukkah. And when we do the Hakafos on Simchas Torah, we have seven Hakafos which correspond to those different attributes, and everybody does that. That's one thing I can tell you about the West Side. Everybody goes Hakafos on Simchas Torah. And yet it has this whole Kabbalistic meaning, and very few people are aware of the linkage to the Kabbalistic thought and to the color schemes which find, you know, play in that sort of thinking as well.
Very interesting. Actually, I was not aware of a lot of what you just gave over, Rabbi Schwartz, and it's extremely interesting, extremely so. And I just wonder how many of us have questioned some of these ideas and really not gone into them because of feeling that they were distinctly not Jewish, but, you know, the way you're giving them over, it certainly seems to be totally or very much in line with a lot of Torah thought.
Right, we are not aware at how much meditative Kabbalistic action has become part of the regular halachic routine, and we're really kind of oblivious to it. I think another area, David, which people have a very big misconception about is davening, and the fact that the Mishnah says that the Hasidim Rishonim, the original Hasidim before there were, you know, historical Hasidim of the 17th century or 18th century. The original Hasidim of the Mishnaic times would spend an hour preparing for davening, an hour davening, and then an hour sort of deconfecting from their davening. And that means an extremely intense level of contemplation, which the average individual would find impossible to fathom, with the exception of maybe on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. And yet this was a daily sort of practice. And Aryeh Kaplan, in his book on Jewish meditation, claims that the reason why we say the Shemona Esrei, the same formula over and over and over again, is that it is in essence the equivalent of what you would call a mantra, where we're meditating on the same words over and over again, and their content and their meaning, and that is just a form of meditation. So where's meditation in Judaism? If we daven three times a day, it's supposed to be an extremely spiritual moment. Now, how many people get up and go to shul in the morning and think of it as this elevating spiritual moment? They think it's something that they have to do. It's the definition of being a frum Jew, right? It becomes a form of obligation. What the Rambam, you know, decries as someone who comes to shul and dumps their load, you know, so to speak, and just paying their dues and leaving and diving in a very rushed fashion, where it's really supposed to be an extraordinarily spiritual moment.
I guess it's the hustle bustle of the world that keeps us from really from spending enough time on Tefillah and Limud Torah also.
I think it's more than hustle and bustle, but I think it's a lack of instruction. I think it's not coming over that way. And we are not being taught adequately in yeshivas. For those who are privileged to go to yeshiva and study for a couple of years, not everybody can do that. You know, davening becomes a little different experience. It's much longer. It's much more reflective. I can tell you from having davened in the Mir Yeshiva, let's say, for Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, that the second they begin Kol Nidre, from the beginning to end, people are crying.
Wow.
The beginning to the end. I mean, you could really mop the floors with the tears of people around you, and that's...
Wow, that's terrific.
And that's really a rare sort of experience to daven in a Lakewood or some of the yeshivas around Eretz Yisrael. You know, someone who's from a... I wouldn't necessarily call him a traditionalist, but Zalman Schachter, whose name you might be familiar with.
Yes, yes I am.
Sort of one of the Jewish mentors of the New Age movement, was originally ordained by Lubavitch as a rabbi, and then studied various other disciplines. I have no idea what his level of spiritual practice is in terms of his halachic beliefs. I have no idea. I can't say that. But he has written some interesting things about what he calls davenology.
Davenology. What is that?
Which is the sort of a play on the Lahavdil, from Scientology, one of the other movements, where he devotes an enormous amount of writing and teaching time to making davening a spiritual moment. So I think we have enormous, enormous resources within Yiddishkeit, storehouses of authentic, powerful spirituality, which are really untapped. And my feeling is that if the New Age can serve, New Age books, ideas, can serve as a trigger for people to re-examine in a demanding way their own Yiddishkeit, to seek its spiritual core and essence, without leaving the halacha behind. Because the halacha is the framework in which everything has to operate. If you don't have the halachic framework, then you're not really talking about Yiddishkeit. You're talking about something close to Judaism, but it's not Judaism. But if we have demand within the halachic world and examine it from a spiritual perspective, there are vast riches to be uncovered.
Well, what about some of these types of New Age ideas and philosophies as helpful to people who are coming aboard the Orthodox world? And as a stepping stone, even if people are to give them up, you know, if they find something greater in Orthodoxy, is it really that negative for them when they're first getting involved in Judaism especially?
I don't think so. I participated in a weekend just this past June, which I had mentioned to you when we spoke before this program, that was organized by a couple from Pennsylvania. But really the first Jewish spiritual weekend in which it was really an opportunity for Kiruv. It was targeting the market, the vast market of Jews who are interested in spiritual practices, who might spend a weekend, instead of turning Friday night into Shabbos, they're turning Friday night into an ashram and spending enormous amount of time and energy in dealing and dabbling in other types of religions and meditations and techniques. So we brought some of those elements into a context of Orthodox Shabbat, and it was an enormously successful event. I think people got an enormous amount out of it. So it certainly is a major bridge for Kiruv, because we're talking about genuinely spiritual people. And I have to reiterate the line between theological and psychological. In the New Age, the psychological and the growth techniques are marvelous. And meditation techniques are marvelous. Physical work, body work, unusual forms of massage, meditation, relaxation, self-help books, self-help groups, everything is great. But when we start believing in spirits and communication with spirits and the divinity of crystals or the divinity of other sorts of things and the practice of other faiths, I think that's where we cross over the line from what's positive to what's negative.
Mm-hmm. So essentially, it's a difference between understanding these things as just material things and material types of sciences and things that can help out, you know, the same in similar ways that other types of secular knowledge could help us, but not to make the end all out of these types of philosophies.
Well, I would say the philosophies I'm not so concerned about, but the religions I'm concerned about. To make out of it a religion would be, to me, akin to making psychology a religion or science a religion. It's just inappropriate. Psychology has what to teach us. Science has an enormous amount to teach us, certainly according to the Rambam, whose opinion it would seem in the Yad HaChazaka is that the study of science is part of mitzvah of Yirat Hashem, meaning that in order to comprehend God, we have to comprehend his creation. Unless we've done some serious scientific observation of the world, we won't be awed by the marvelous complexity of biology and astronomy and medicine. And when we see how that works, then we become more awed by Hashem and his creation. So certainly science itself, certainly according to the Rambam, is an act of mitzvah for each and every Jew to pursue. But to make out of it a religion, let's put it this way, David. What is the big question I always got was, what is spirituality? And for years that question, you know, is something that you're confronted with. You're Orthodox, but are you? He said, I don't want to be religious. I want to be spiritual. Today, no one wants to be called religious. Being called religious is like negative. It seems to be have a connotation of small-mindedness. Of I hate to use a term in Yiddish, but to be a chinyak, which is some people would say adaraba, just the opposite. I'm someone who's medaktik b'mitzvos, careful mitzvos. But for all the diktuk mitzvos, for all the careful observation of mitzvos, it seems to indicate a lack of the spiritual element of Yiddishkeit. So what is the spirituality? Very simply, the spiritual is the contact with the part of you which is divine, which is your neshama, and your relationship with Hashem. Those two things define spirituality.
Beautiful.
It is the spirit part of our existence. So if I have a dialogue with Hashem through my davening, through my meditating, through other practices that I have, if I have a way of examining what my neshama is all about and studying about it, then that is a spiritual dimension to Yiddishkeit, which I think so many people are looking for. But we've got to keep those terms within closer to our fold, because if we're going to find those answers in New Age literature, I think we're going to be off base from what our basic belief systems are.
Well, can some of the New Age ideas supplement or explain, maybe in certain subtle ways, different nuances of Yiddishkeit? Well, especially those that maybe over the last few years or the last generations, you know, due to the Gullus, the exile, that we've been unable to, for instance, you know, devote as much time to davening, to tefillah, as we'd like to, and that when we look at meditation or even maybe something that the ashrams are providing in terms of, even though it's certainly not as comprehensive for sure, and we even say lahavdil.
Right. I can bring those back home. I could see that could be very positive, right? If someone has trained in meditation generally and then decides they want to apply it in their avodat Hashem in terms of davening, more power to them. We need people who can inspire people to have more kavana. In yeshivas, they used to call those people mashgichim, you know. The mashgiach, his job was really to inspire and to develop people's character. So I would say it's no different than science in that sense, David. I would agree with you very wholeheartedly that if you find something that works in human development, let's use it.
But then the key would have to
be afraid to use it.
But then the key would have to be moderation, ultimately, that because it would be hard to not get carried away with these other types of teachings like you brought out yourself, and to keep them in balance and to know that halacha is still the ultimate answer when we have to make choices.
Correct. As long as you're inside the halacha commitment as best as you can, and no one's perfect in their halacha commitment, even very religious Jews, as the Mishnah Berurah writes in his introduction to the laws of Shabbos, says unless you learn about the laws of Shabbos, you could be the most devout Jew in the world, but you're inevitably going to violate Shabbos on a regular basis because you just don't know. So we need an awareness of halacha and an awareness that the halacha is supposed to give us compartments, cubby holes, opportunities to experience some form of religious moment, right? Mitzvot aren't just something we need, we must do because Hashem is going to punish us if we don't, but they're opportunities. And as long as we can maintain those opportunities, then why can't we pursue things that turn us on, so to speak, and help us be more connected to the spiritual part of our life?
And even more than that, that that the halacha really provides a lot of the comprehensive answers to what some of these other types of disciplines are saying on a lesser level. That if we look in the halacha, we'll just like Bin Bagbag says in Perkei Avos, that we look into the Torah, we'll see that everything is really there. And if there is a truth, if there is something positive, that we don't have to assimilate it to the point of taking credit for the revival of it, in contemporary society. But certainly, perhaps we should understand that if it is valid, then it has a source in Torah, and it's somewhere to be found in Al Pi Remez, according to a hint, at least in the Halach as well.
Yes, and it often takes a lot of research to do that. You had mentioned before the concept of ecology, and I had a reflection on that. I think a danger about the ecological, the Greens movement, right, throughout the world.
Yes.
Speak about the Greens movement, the environmentalists, and you had mentioned in your notes that you had sent me prior to the program, you had referred to Rachel Carson's book on the issues of planetary abuse.
Yes, Silent Spring.
Silent Spring. And so the one inherent danger there in ecology is that I have found that what a lot of is being written in the place, let's say, the Utni Reader,
yes,
the New Age Journal, and other sort of publications, is the general concept that Earth is divine, that there's a certain divinity to creation. And the reason why we have to sort of defend forests and animals and the dolphins or whatever it is, the dolphins are a major sort of symbol for the New Age movement, I think you would agree to that, and the protection of them because they represent somehow an intelligence that's not human, and there's a fascination with non-human intelligence among the New Age.
Well, actually, the dolphins are very interesting for other reasons as well, along with the whales, that they are actually mammals, and that according to evolutionary theory, is that they've been on the land and gone back to the sea, which makes them different than the other fish, and in a sense could be a sea monster too, but that's speculation.
Well, it's certainly, however we're going to deal with evolution, which has its own problems according to, our tradition. But certainly if a dolphin is a symbol of, other sort of intelligence which rivals human intelligence. And the fascination with other sorts of forms of intelligence, extraterrestrials. I think if you pick up any New Age journal, you're going to find a million ads for UFOs and UFO sightings. So I found in the course of my research. And really, to me, what that is about wanting to connect with Hashem's message. And in some way, the Neshama knows that there's an intelligence beyond the human and wants to know about it. We don't have privilege to Nevuah today. We have it through Torah. We have it through a limited form of Ruach HaKodesh, according to some groups, believe that their leaders achieve a level of Ruach HaKodesh, particularly among the Hasidic circles, or even amongst the, ask your average yeshivish guy about the Stipler Gaon Zatzal, who they felt that he had learned so much Torah that he had access to information about people. A famous story is that they gave the Stipler a list of names of fellows who were having a hard time finding their shidduch to give them a blessing. And the fact that they even went to a sort of a Litvish Gaon and asked them for blessings is unusual. It's more of a Hasidic type of thing to do, but it was done. Very commonly done. I was there myself. And the story goes that they gave the Stipler a list of names and said, please pray for these people. They should find their mates. And he said, what do you mean? They passed up their mate already. These are people who had access to their mate and turned them away.
Wow.
Now, how could the Stipler have known that?
Mm.
But they attributed to the Stipler otherworldly knowledge because of the vast amount of Torah he had assimilated. He had put in, incorporated into his being, that it gave him additional inside information to what was going on in the world. Now, that's a big point about New Age movement as well. We do have that within traditional circles. But the point I was saying about back to the point on ecology, is that they want to attribute to ecology and to the physical world a divinity. And that I find very frightening sort of inclination, because Earth is not God. That, as I mentioned in my article, is classically moving towards the old time of Odah Zarah. When it said that Avram told the angels to wash their feet because they had the sands of the earth on them, that they bowed down to the sands of the earth, I don't believe that they were so foolish to worship sand. What they might have been worshiping was the concept that earth, with its natural forces and its seasons, is a divine sort of entity, whether there's a god or not. And
Or parallels the divine entity, in that the seasons are reminiscent of the symbols of divinity, of the symbols of Hashem, of being so much beyond us at times. Is you know, when I go out in the winter and I feel cold and I shiver, it makes me think about how far away Hashem is, and in the same way I feel very close to Hashem sometimes in the summertime. So in that way that. The seasons can be symbolic.
Positive, yes, and that's what we mentioned before about the Rambam, that we have an obligation to look at nature to be inspired about God. My fear about a lot of the ecological parties and movements is that they're not theistic. They're not believing in God and seeing nature as God's creation necessarily, but they're seeing nature as divine, and that's the end of the line, so to speak. And if we start worshiping nature, that's classic Avodah Zarah. I speak about the Asherah in the Torah as the symbol. It's the fertile tree which represents the powers and force of giving life. The people in the ancient world weren't idiots. They weren't fools when they were involved in these type of worship. They were powerful forces at work, and they were reckoning with them and what they meant. Except that they didn't go the one step beyond that Yiddishkeit introduced, that Avraham Avinu began to teach, to remind the world about, which was that there is a creator and there is a supervisor in the world. That's the one invisible God, Shema Yisrael, Shem Elkeinu, Shem Echad. And if that thought is sort of not connected to the ecological interest, then I think it's headed in the dangerous direction.
Absolutely. Gee, this is very difficult, but I have to break for commercials.
Okay.
Welcome back. This is Dave Abramson. The show is Insights from Beyond, Celebrating Judaism in the New Age, and we're talking with Rabbi J. Yaakov Schwartz, Rabbi of Congregation Ohev Shalom on Manhattan's Upper West Side, and instructor at the James Stryer School, Yeshiva University, and a chaver of the Kollel Elyon, Rav Yitzchak Elchanan Seminary, also at YU. Rabbi Schwartz, as he mentioned, is also a musmach of Yeshiva Torah Vadas, and he's doing better than I am on this first show, and I'm very lucky to have him on. If anyone would like to call with some questions or want to voice their own opinion at the station, we have a few minutes left. You can call at 627-1300. That number again is 627-1300. Rabbi Schwartz, maybe... Are you there, Rabbi Schwartz?
Yes, David.
Okay. Maybe we should conclude, as traditional Jews, that we should be more assertive as a matter of habit in accepting new ideas as they come to light in the world at large, so long as these ideas, whatever they might be, don't overtly conflict with Jewish values. I feel that the key to knowing whether to take some new idea on is in whether or not it would probably add some significant improvement to my life. What other issues do you feel would be relevant for people considering whether or not to study yoga, for example, or get involved in a Jewish meditation group?
Well, I think those two are probably not equal. A Jewish meditation group, if it's run by someone who has a knowledge of tradition, can be a marvelous enhancement to a person's way of dealing with stress, to a person having more effective davening, and just being a more effective person in the world. I think that's fabulous. Yoga, I think, needs to be examined on carefully in terms of if there's a theological dimension to the work, or is it purely going to be a physical sort of work? And I think that has to be examined more. A person has to be more well-read about yoga and what it means to them, and should seek a spiritual mentor, a competent rabbi, or a religious person who has some familiarity to consult with them on that case. So I think you've got to really sort of take it on a case-by-case basis on all of those things. And again, with the guideline of psychological and physical well-being being very positive and healthy and something that gets into the theological. For example, karate on its most advanced levels does contain theology. That's why there's something called like Torah Dojo, which is run by Rabbi Chaim Sober up at Yeshiva University, who's a colleague of mine there, had to struggle to develop a system of theology within karate on the higher levels, on black belts and advanced black belts, which would be compatible with Yiddishkeit. And that is a sort of a controversial thing. So it has to be grappled with by the educated Jew. Really has to have their eye open and be bo-rare, select out what's appropriate, and leave behind what might not be for us.
Excellent. I'd like to conclude by wishing Rabbi Schwartz a yeshakayach, a groyser yeshakayach, for being on the show with us tonight. And I want to wish everyone a freilichen and a happy Hanukkah. And you should join us next week for another possible special surprise guest and a discussion on other New Age topics relevant in Jewish tradition. And I don't mean to take a special surprise guest too lightly, and that everyone who is volunteering to be on this show and they're not being recompensed at all really has a big mitzvah in my eyes, and I'm sure my listeners feel the same way. Thank you again, Rabbi Schwartz.
My pleasure.